Hey, it's the steering committee, and we're back, and what a week it's been. I'm Ryan Barkey, and this is...
Douglas Fogler. I'm both here again, reconvening, so...
Yeah, what a week. What a week of car stuff in our lives. You drove an interesting car today.
I did. I'm fresh off a pretty good test drive today. Yeah. Test drove a 1999 Porsche 911 Carrera.
And I think this sort of, well, I don't know, I've been sending a lot of BAT listings for really nice 996s your way.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, you even made at some point you made the outlandish claim that you would be happy selling your base Cayman and just purchasing this 996 911 and just living without the car.
You know, there's something to it. There's an exceptionally nice black one on there right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's only got about 30,000 or 40,000 miles. And it's just a Carrera. It's not a 4S or anything fancy. It's just a really... When you see one of those,
yeah,
and it's in really exceptional condition,
mm-hmm,
you know, it's a pretty enticing proposition.
Yeah, I mean, the elephant in the room, it is widely considered the worst 911, which it might be. It may be the worst 911. But that still might make it better than almost every other car out there, though. Right?
And dynamically, there's no way it's the worst 911. But
some people certainly think that, though. But you think like dynamically, some of the older ones might be worse.
Oh, or? I mean, it's certainly not one of the slower ones. It's certainly not.
No. It was. I mean, its performance is right where it should be in terms of its contemporaries.
Well, the knock is those headlights.
Well, that's one knock, yeah.
And you saw the car on BAT that had the aftermarket.
Yeah.
Headlight conversion to the round headlights.
Yeah.
So that was an abomination.
I think it's the 98s to 2001s have what they like to call the fried egg headlights, basically. They're just that amorphous blob of a shape, basically. The 2002s, they have that little more of that cut sort of angle profile, which look a little bit better. They look a little bit better, but it's not much better.
They just put a painted piece basically over
more or less. They just made the shape a little bit more defined. But yes, there's many. I've seen a number, some better than others, of aftermarket solutions to try and change the shape of the headlights, basically. The one I drove today just had the general generic. You know what they did, though? They must have changed it out so it didn't have that orange part of the indicator. So they were kind of cleared. Okay. So it made it look a little bit better.
Pick up on it in the pictures.
Yeah, it made it look a little bit better. They were faded, though. They definitely would need to be like clean.
Yeah.
But that was fine. The interior was in decent shape. I thought it had a brand new steering wheel. It looked like it might have had a brand new.
Well,
like,
that's
it looked
because brand it had
new.
Been
maybe
totaled.
The airbag had to be replaced. I mean, the guy, the dealer is like, no. As far as I know, that's the original. I'm like, it looked brand new.
Yeah.
You know, I test drove a similar vintage Boxster, and I remember thinking it was fun to drive, but the interior quality, you could definitely there's a difference. There was a period in Porsche's time period where they went real cheap on the interior materials.
And it's basically the same interior, right?
It looks very similar, yeah. It looks all the buttons on the stereo and on the climate control all are probably exact same. You know, it had a nicer shift, gear shift, though.
Yeah.
Some of them have that kind of weird sort of roundish shape. This had a nice, like, very traditional, almost like something you might see in a 964.
Okay, interesting.
And it was all black on the inside, black on the outside. It had black, probably optional wheels.
Yeah, those wheels were kind of a hot mess.
I didn't love them. Yeah, I didn't love them.
But you weren't really looking at this car.
Not this particular one. Sorry. To Nori, who was my SS person.
But 996s are nice. On every corner.
They're very easy to find, we all know they're you can have them for under 20,000, you know, all day long. I mean, they're out there all the time for that. And I just wanted to see, I guess I just finally wanted to see, like, what's it like?
Yeah.
Like, what's the driving experience?
Opportunity to drive one, basically.
Exactly. There was one that happened to be very close by. I could go over really quickly. They didn't hassle me about it at all. They just threw me the keys. It's
cool.
You know, it's advertised for way under 20 and, you know.
Yeah.
I said, let's go try it out.
Yeah.
I should finally get a feel for it.
My
impression was that... It was good. The engine sounded great.
Yeah.
It shifted nicely. It handled, you know, fairly well. It didn't feel that powerful, though.
Interesting.
Maybe I've just been spoiled by some of the newer hot hatches I've been driving.
Did you get it up in the
I got it up. Rips. I was able to take it up. I was able to take it onto the highway.
Yeah.
You know, I got on one side and then had to come back on the other. I had more traffic on the way back, so I didn't get to really go through it. But I got it up into the red line. Okay. Yeah. In first and second and third gear. You know, I just kind of really, you know, tried to let it, you know, stretch out its legs a little bit. We drove it on some surface streets at first to kind of let it warm up. I wanted to kind of see how it felt around town, and then got onto the highway. So, but you know, I a few months back, I drove a 2005 base Boxster.
Right.
And so I mean, that's the closest, and I drove a base Cayman.
Yeah.
And I guess I would say that, especially the 2005 Boxster, it just felt like it had more pickup.
And on paper, it should, 95 horsepower less.
Yeah. But maybe a little bit lighter, and I don't know, just felt a little bit more dynamic.
So you think that this car was mechanically 100%?
I have no reason to think there were any major problems. I couldn't hear any, you know, the suspension, you know, there wasn't any the struts weren't squeaking or anything. I didn't hear any problems with that. It felt planted.
Yeah.
You know, it felt very solid. Yeah. It felt like a very, like, it's almost like if I hadn't driven those other cars, I would have thought this was a very special car. Yeah, you know, and again, the engine sounded great.
Yeah.
You know, as it was going up through its revs, but I guess it left me lacking a little bit. And I was really trying to go into it with an open mind. I know a lot of people have their predisposition against 996 era, you know, Porsches, but I guess I just didn't feel like it was great. I don't know.
Huh. Well, no, a car should.
I mean, I feel like I've been blown away by cars that are, like, you know, around the same price market, but are considered, you know, like your BRZs and your GTIs and things like that. Yeah. I came out of GTI just, like, floored.
Did that feel quicker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It did. And it may not have been, but it just felt like it had more
and we've, oomph. And we've talked again about how we're at altitude.
Yeah.
You know, naturally aspirated cars do suffer a bit.
Yeah. Well, and especially now one that's, you know, over 22 years old or whatever, 21 years old. I mean, so what were those working with? About
296.
296 brand new. So probably about, you know, 270 at the horse, at the wheels.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, probably 270 at the wheels, 260 at the wheels.
Yeah.
But now, you know, 21 years later, what do you think we're working with? Maybe another...
Who knows? I mean, it could be stronger. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. It's just... you know, when I see a car like that, that has had some mods, tasteful or otherwise, done to it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think the money went toward the mods and not the regular maintenance, or who knows? I mean, a new set of spark plugs could be huge. Or
only 88,000 miles.
Yeah.
It's for its age, low mileage. Yeah.
Not bad. Who knows the history? When I see the headlights that are clouded over a garage car, the headlights don't get like that.
No, and you're right. It's almost like, well, they didn't care enough to fix that. So you're right. They're probably not changing out spark plugs or anything.
I bet it had a kicking system in it, though.
It did have an aftermarket head unit. I did notice that.
I know.
Yeah. How did you know that? I didn't test. I always, on these test drives, I always turn the radio off because it's never. If I'm just going to see how the car feels, I want to hear it. Yeah. I want to hear all the engine. I want to hear sort of any unusual noises, that kind of thing. I want to hear things like the suspension, if it's squeaking or not, but it did have an aftermarket head unit.
I'm glad you drove it because I think, you know, well, prices have come up, but I still think 996s are real values in a lot of cases. And for the first time since they were new, even the style and look is...
They've certainly grown on me. I was so adamant against them. And then, you know, we've talked about this a lot, is like sometimes cars just grow on you. The look of them just grow on you. Mm-hmm. You know, and the 996 has grown on me. In certain angles, it actually looks really good. It's almost like you can kind of... It was the most stylistic risk that they took in terms of like changing the overall shape. I would say they kind of went back a little ways with the 997 and the 991s.
So. Yeah, I'm going to turn my phone off, by the way.
Yeah, who does that?
Yeah. Low class people.
Mine's still on. I'm just not popular. I'm not getting any calls right now. I'll take this opportunity to turn mine off too. So.
Yeah, I think it's important to say too that you were never a 911 guy. You always came in, you know, the Cayman was the car that did it for you. So
the Cayman, the Cayman was my sort of entree into sort of like really desiring Porsches. But I mean, like, I feel like you're supposed to, you know, if you're, you know, any, you know, car person, anyone who's really into cars, you're supposed to go through a 9/11 phase, isn't it? Yeah. Isn't it something you're required to do? You're supposed to.
Yeah, but
you're supposed to love alphas but never own one.
But it sounds like this isn't
a contender. To own a 911. It right now it's not. Yeah, I mean, okay. And the other problem is that, you know, even if the cost is the same, you know, I know it sounds really, you know, boring, but like, but the maintenance will still be, you know, the cost of a $98,000 sports car.
That's,
you know, it's like, you know, but some of the things I'm looking at, it's like they're more reasonable maintenance costs, yeah. You know, and I guess if I just don't love it though, if I wasn't just blown away by it. So it's like,
yeah,
I was kind of surprised. I thought I would have a dilemma after driving this. I thought this would sort of like, you know, it would sort of ruin me for other cars. And then I would be like, well, now I need to make an old 996 work. Yeah. So,
well, you know, we've talked before about how I had my 05 997. It was a Carrera S, so on paper it had a bit more power, 355, but mm-hmm. here at altitude, and especially when you get in the mountains, I thought it was lacking some,
a bit. Well, it's got a little, it's got extra, it's arguably grown into more of a GT car,
yeah,
the 911. So it's carrying around a little extra weight.
But weren't those right around 3,000 pounds? I'd have to look that up.
Well, it's just the problem is when I compare it to contemporary Boxers and Caymans, those just feel so much more light. They may not be, but they just feel like you're just less mass that you're moving around.
I think
around
there's less, there's just less slop in the whole works. But
maybe, yeah. It was good, but I wouldn't put it ahead of the Caymans that I've driven. Yeah. One of these days I kind of have to drive a couple of these like right back to back. I need to get immediate sort of feedback on that, but I would say from my memory I thought I was more excited than the BRZ too.
I'm curious, so you got out of this car, it was roughly 300 horsepower. You need to now get in my Cayman that supposedly has a 300 horsepower as well, but a turbo 4, so it goes about it a very different way. I think has a wider power band. So two cars that are about 300 horsepower on paper. And I'd be curious to,
well, and it's I think that will feel different because I think yours will feel like it has much more usable torque. I bet the torque numbers on your car are much better, so I bet it's a better power to weight, you know, torque, you know thrust to weight ratio. And I think even on your base Boxster, I think there's something to be said for that mid-engine feel. I mean, it was just I felt immediately comfortable going fast in that 2005 Boxster. I felt like I just jumped into that thing, and it was just like, it was reading my thoughts like as I was putting the inputs into the steering wheel. And I think that has to do with the mid-engine.
Is this the first 911 you've driven?
I drove a friend of mine's 1989 911.
Okay, so you start.
Yeah. I haven't driven a modern 911.
Okay, but I'm glad this wasn't your first 911.
No, it wasn't. Not technically. I drove a G50 era 1989 911.
Yeah, it's got a little more cred.
Yeah, it was. At that time though, that was the first Porsche I'd ever.
Yeah.
Driven. No, I take it back. That's not true. But I've driven a few.
There's that sweet 924 you drove.
I got to drive a Boxster a few years back, a first generation Boxster, Boxster S.
Yeah.
It was after my wedding. A friend of the family let us drive it. But I didn't really get. I didn't. That was like I was so nervous, and my wife is next to me in her wedding dress with her perfectly, you know, manicured hair. So I didn't really like do very much.
You didn't
with
have
that,
time
so.
To critique the finer points of the driving experience.
It's funny. She agreed to this, but then when I don't think she really understood what it meant, and then she realized the car was a convertible.
Okay.
And we were driving from the church back to the reception, and there was a highway stretch, and she's like, "We're not driving fast because I'm not messing up my hair." And I was like, No, don't worry. He taught me how to put the roof up. So we drove out of the church for some pictures.
Yeah.
Got to the edge of the parking lot. I put the roof up. And so I could kind of open it up a little bit.
Nice.
But I still didn't because I was nervous. It was a friend of the family. Yeah. I didn't want to ruin it or anything, I guess. Yeah.
I'm glad that this wasn't your first.
Not my first 911, but one of the first, and definitely the first that's like the oldest of the modern 911s, right? We'll call it that. I think I would like to drive a 997, and my same friend who had the G50 era, he has now a 997 Targa, I assume I'll be able to drive at some point. It's a Targa 4.
Dark blue?
Yeah.
I think I saw him today.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, with a tan interior.
Tell you about that off.
Okay, all right.
Offline here, but because there aren't too many of those
No, it's true. It's a dark blue with a tan interior. I think I'd like to drive a 997. Just to kind of see. Now, those are a little bit, in general, you don't want to buy any of the 997s that are below 20,000 generally.
Are there 997s below $20,000?
His was, but it was pretty high mileage.
Oh, that's,
but it checked out though. No, it checked out though. He did the PPI on it, and it's been super reliable.
Deal of the century. I don't think I've ever seen one that's.
He gets the best deals. We have to have him on sometime. Okay. He gets the best deals on cars.
Even when I see one that's beat, it's usually $30,000 or $32,000.
Yeah, that kind of seems to be. Yeah, I mean, you maybe you drop.
Although they are coming down.
Yeah, maybe they drop down to like 27, 28, but. But I'd like to drive one now because, I'd like to see sort of how that feels, but you know, I don't know. I think I'd always be comparing it to the Cayman.
Well, I mean, that's what you came in looking for, and the 911 is a different beast. And I mean, I'll be the first to admit, I like the lines of a 911 better. I like saying I've got a 911, but my Cayman is a much better driving car than my 911 was.
I know, it's like you're like, objectively, it's considered better, but you'd still, in your head, you'd still want to have
something about a 911. It's, that's, you know.
Yeah, I see that. I can understand that. And there's something about having, arguably one of the best sports cars ever created. You know, whatever vintage you get, there's always something good about it. There's always like a nice conversation to have about it. There's always something you can say about it. And, you know, all the stuff I'm reading about the new one, the new even just the, the base on the Carrera S is that it's like, it's apparently
shockingly,
it's performing at the level of the high end turbos and GT3s even. So, which is insane, because I don't know what that means for when they, those divisions get a hand on that thing. So
I think sub 3 seconds for the S and pretty close for the base.
That's what I'm hearing. Yeah. There's, I mean, like shockingly quick and just PDK. great to drive, just, great dynamics on
it. Now they definitely, now they brought the wood back. And some other things, it makes me think that this is more of a GT than ever.
Yeah.
A GT that's just, because those are supercar numbers.
It's definitely bigger. Yeah, it's bigger forever. Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Well, but they, once the sort of the GT division gets a hand of it, they can make it smaller.
Sure.
Not actually smaller, but they can make it feel smaller. So, but yeah, it is, it's going to be interesting to see what that does. It'll be interesting to see what that does for the base 991 market. And I guess those things will probably start to faster,
I just for kicks the other day I priced out 911 T's, so the 991 2s, T's, and I was shocked at how expensive those still were. Those are all still $80,000.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I was really surprised.
Yeah, like 80,000 with 20,000 miles on it, or
average miles, but because on paper there really isn't any extra performance over a base, and those you can find a base 9911 in the 40s now, I think. 40s, 50s. So anyway, well, I'm glad you drove it, and
I got to go on the highway. I got some highway, I got some surface road. I mean, sometimes when you go to test these cars, you never get off like a surface road.
No,
you really don't get a feel for it at all.
Did the sales guy go with you?
Yeah, he did, but he was pretty chill though.
Yeah, cool.
He wasn't trying to give the hard. They were trying to give me the hard sell on the way out when I had to check in. I had to ask about the IMS bearing on it because I wasn't sure what the situation was.
Well, the way they teased that explanation in the ad.
Well, and so the guy, he almost, he seemed insulted when I asked about it. I was confused as to whether it had been replaced because you were talking about a warranty on it. Uh-huh. What he basically told me, and I'd have to verify all this, is that he was saying that generation of the IMS bearing only has like a 3% fail rate, which I think is...
So the used Volkswagen guy is a Porsche bearing expert, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I was like, so basically it was his long way of saying like that they hadn't replaced it. Yeah. They just felt it wasn't enough of
an issue. I'm pretty sure those early 996s are the worst offenders, but I could be
wrong. That's what I thought too. It's like there wasn't a version of this that was much worse than that. I mean, there wasn't a version where they were like all grenading themselves. It was the 3% was like, that was a problem people were having with it, right?
Yeah, I think 3% to 5%, but those were the ones that were 3% to 5%.
Yeah, it's a complete engine, destruction. So
yeah, so you didn't get a straight answer on any.
I did. No, I did. He basically said they didn't think it was enough of a fail rate that they weren't going to do anything about it. It's not replaced. It's 88,000 miles, and he said he did. I'll do say to his credit, he said that they supposedly did a Blackstone oil test.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
I'd like to see that paperwork.
I would too before I put any money down. But he said if I believe him, it's like it came back with no. Metal, shards or anything like that.
It doesn't go until it goes. And
although I guess, I don't know, I guess I'd have to look to see, but I'm wondering if, like, does it go? If it, I mean, what is 88,000 miles on it? Is that like when you start to enter the danger zone? It's probably not.
You know, this is the, this is something that's been discussed, you know.
Yeah, ad nauseum.
And it's, you know, you could make a case for any position, and yeah, I mean, you know, but I have heard the higher mileage cars. Well, if it's made it that far, it's probably
good. Then it's probably going to be fine. And it's, but, you know, there's people who say, like, if you keep driving it, it'll be fine. Like, you know, it's when people let them sit for too long, that becomes a problem.
So. It is something I'm sort of tired of hearing about. It is something you have to ask. I know there are these solutions, quote unquote solutions, that certainly can't hurt. But every car has an Achilles heel. Every car, you know.
Yeah.
I've talked about, I had a, you know, my 2008 S4 that, you know, those had carbon buildup. And then those have some sort of belt that can snap. And, so every car's got its Achilles heel.
It's like a plastic chain guard or something.
And when you're talking about an $18,000 or $19,000 Porsche, you know, I mean, you're rolling the dice anyway. Right?
So that's the update. So Doug is now driven a 9.
Yeah.
Doug's quest for an economy sports car.
You know, and I will say,
I've driven a 996 now.
No, and I'm so glad you did. Yeah. And the 911's a different, like I said before, 911's a different kind of animal. And when I bought my 997, I remember being really underwhelmed on the test drive. I ended up buying the car because it only had 9,000 miles. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
It had the look. It was a neat example. And I grew to love it. I sort of learned to drive it. I learned to extract the performance out of it. I think this is not the route for you.
Maybe not. I mean, I think a 911 might be in my future. I just don't know if it's right now. I think I might wait for a higher spec one later, a later higher spec one maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, like a GTS or an S at least.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, or find one that's supercharged or something, like a lot of people here do with this. So.
Yeah. There's anyway, one bring a trailer recently.
Glad you drove it.
Yeah.
All right. Wrapping this up.
We'll be right back with
another exciting tale of automotive. I don't know.
Automotive. Well, I'll talk about, I did test drive one other car today.
We'll be back. Doug's got his tale to tell.
Well, I did my driving homework today for sure. Yeah. I apparently did not want to do any actual work today. I was kind of
which is important when you build by the hour.
Yeah, it is. I should be staying out of the office. Well, I put out a big fire this morning with a client that I don't get to charge by the hour, and so a problem that was created for no reason by someone else that works with me. Not getting into details, but I put that fire out. It's good. Client's happy again. So I'm going to go out and test drive some cars now.
Friday afternoon.
It's Friday afternoon. Yeah. I've had a long week, so haven't we all, though? So so the other car I went and test drove was a 2016 Mini Cooper S. Unfortunately, though, with an automatic transmission.
Yeah, and that's an automatic.
It's a real automatic. DSG. Yeah, it had you could switch it in. You could, you know, click it over into a manual mode on the gear shift there, but no, not paddles or anything like that. So. It was an S, but with some of the John Cooper Works cosmetic touches to it, but not any necessarily of the performance.
So even
stuff.
Mini Cooper has taken the M Sport / AMG.
They've bastardized light, whatever that the most. Yeah, the most
S line, you
know,
Audi.
Their John Cooper Works, this iconic name and what it drives in terms of, like, you know, the type of car. Now it could be just a package that you check off on the options list.
I would argue that this John Cooper Works cosmetic pieces are not their strong
point. But that's not what I would have. Yeah, they should have come up with something different, because John Cooper Works probably would not have wanted, like, big, heavy, like, heated leather seats and, you know, like the infotainment system. I don't think that's what he was thinking about when he was, you know, modifying Minis. But, It was nice. It had decent pickup.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not. It's nothing like a GTI even.
And that's what those aren't 200 horsepower.
I don't know. They're considered on paper like direct competitors. Really? So they should be. They should be similar. Yeah. So yeah, GTI is 200 horsepower and 250 pounds per feet.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of usable torque. And maybe the automatic was really holding me back, but you know, this didn't feel as, it didn't feel as peppy. Okay. It felt nice, but it was like, you know, if I hadn't driven anything else, yeah. I would think it was pretty fun.
Is that
fun.
The 3-cylinder or the 4-cylinder?
Yeah, it might be the 3-cylinder.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I think it's and a 3-cylinder, I think it's 3-cylinder turbo, yeah.
Because they were 4-cylinder turbos went to a 4-cylinder supercharged, or am I doing it backwards?
I think it was, I think initially they were normally aspirated and supercharged.
Okay.
And then, yeah, and then they went to turbocharged. Right. Okay. Yeah. So, kind of makes me want to go try and see if I can find a good first generation S, because I think those are like, those are stupid cheap now.
They've got to be, yeah.
There's one, it's near my daughter's school. We walk by it a lot when we're going to the playground. It's definitely owned by an older person.
Mm.
It's an original, you know, well, not original, but, you know, that generation S, blue with white stripes.
Huh.
And it's owned by an older person. I bet they've absolutely babied it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to see that one for sale.
First generation are probably the best.
They look the best, too.
Truest to form. Purest to,
I think that, the ones from, like, the Italian job. The Mark Wahlberg, Charlize Theron version. I like those a lot. Yeah. But, you know, it was nice. It had nice features on it. It'd be very comfortable. But, I mean, to me, I would never choose that over the GTI.
Okay, interesting.
I mean, never. It's the same type of thing where it's like an adult hatchback, you know, that's got some performance, but it's not as good as a GTI.
Yeah.
So why would I ever choose it over that? So,
yeah. No, I'm with you.
And the new ones, I don't think they look as good. The proportions on it, they're a little bit
cartoonish. Like they've got like they're a little bloated. They're a little
in some ways like they're awkward.
Salty food the night before and
the headlights, the headlight to sort of deck lid front proportions are just off. Not as good as that first the first generation of that.
And that's that happens to a lot of brands.
Especially when it's heritage design, it's hard to refreshen and make it new when you're still trying to go to like an old design, you know, look like the old cars.
No, but it's good you're driving all this range of stuff because, you know, you won't wonder what if. And
I don't think so. I think, well, when I it takes me a while to buy a car, but at least when I know when I do, I go out and test drive everything. And
takes
you
a while,
It does take a while. I think this will happen. I know I keep saying this.
Yeah.
This will happen.
Yeah.
My wife and I have been talking about it and we're ready to change our car situation.
Yeah, cool.
So I think it will happen.
I'm excited for you.
Well, I'm excited to come join you in one of these drives, but unfortunately, maybe you'll be sidelined for 6 months. And do you want to segue?
Yeah, interesting.
That?
Yeah. You know,
what's new in your world these days?
Yeah, you know, and I swear we're not doing this just to keep the content fresh, but I got a call from Beechwood Porsche, which is it's outside of Cleveland, Ohio. They're the dealer I bought my 718 came in from new 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago exactly. I should be getting that expensive Colorado license plate renewal here in the mail.
Day.
Saying that would I be interested in an allocation for a new 718 GT4? And well, of course I'm interested.
Let me tell you, interest is not the problem.
Is not the problem.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I'd kind of forgotten. I had even put my name on a list way back when. One of those things I thought, that day would never come.
Yeah.
And again, I have heard that with these new GT4s, they're not going to be limited or as limited as the 981, the 2016 GT4s that have held their value so amazingly well.
Well, they weren't, I mean, that was an experiment. That was the first time they were running full GT on the Cayman, so they weren't sure how they were going to sell. They all sold out instantly. But
They still sell, I mean, anywhere from mid-70s to well over $100,000. So they're within about 90% of what the original sticker was on those, so it's kind of amazing. And I've kept my eye open for one. There's actually a really nice one here in town that I might, if I have time, go check out. But yeah, and then I got this call. And if you remember the last episode, I had just driven a 997.2 GT3.
Yeah, what did we decide? The best car you've ever driven?
And obviously I have not driven a 718 GT4. I can't imagine many people in the States have.
Or you've never even driven any GT4.
So I haven't. I am obviously familiar with the 718 rather. Although I don't like the lines quite as well as the 997.2, it's a good car. It's comfortable to me, obviously, having driven the regular Cayman for 2 years now. I really like the looks of this, you know, at least on the configurator. Mm-hmm. They start right at 100, which is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But, you know, brand new car under warranty or 10-year-old car with 37,000 miles, it's... And that's only $20,000 more than a 2016 GT4 would run with similar options. So,
yeah.
And we'll see what happens with those older ones, if the prices come down or not.
But yeah, I still think they will. But you're right. They didn't make a lot of them.
I mean, I think they're going to bottom out in 72, 75.
I would have argued that they were, that the older ones would have held their value, you know, better if the new one came out and it was turbocharged. It was like a tuned version of the four cylinder. When they made the announcement that it's going to be normally aspirated six cylinder, I assumed that meant like, oh, well, that means the old ones are going to drop off. But you're right, because they didn't make a lot of them, so they're still pretty rare.
They are. And I don't know that these will be that rare, or if they'll be 1 year only or what. But so I have played around with that configurator a lot.
Yeah. What's your fancy on the configurator?
So there are a couple different ways I could go with this, and they're both. Don't get me wrong. This is an expensive car. It's a lot of car for what it is, and a car that I think would hold its value pretty well. So maybe not quite the careless investment that it seems at first brush, but. So I would go one of two ways. The less guilty option would be to get a pretty base GT4. Mm-hmm. No carbon buckets. I mean, you still get the sports seats that I have now. It's not a bad option.
Yeah.
They're the upgrade in the car I have now, and they work just fine. Something about the buckets, though. There's absolutely no movement. You feel like you're locked into the car.
Yeah.
And even I fit in them, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. be an incentive to... Mm-hmm. to not get any weight, I guess. But so there are a couple of ways. I would go that base route, and I would really maybe do a couple cheap or no cost options. Maybe a fire extinguisher. Maybe I really like the where they take the dash, the metal strip on the dash, and they cover it in leather. And mm-hmm. I think it's a no cost option in the GT4. Mm-hmm. I love having almost that blacked out interior, which is what you want in sunny Colorado. It looks good.
Yeah.
I don't want the carbon fiber. I don't want Alcantara. I would do the no cost leather wrap.
So no carbon. You say no carbon fiber, but you don't want any of that trim package on the inside,
right? Which is like $600-900. I had that in my old S4. I feel like that's kind of dated, but I take it for free, but I'm not going to pay extra for it. I'm not going to spend extra for the Bose stereo. In fact, the Burmester I don't think is even offered in the GT4. Mm-hmm. I'd keep it pretty cheap.
Okay, steel brakes.
Pretty lightly optioned steel brakes. Or I could go my dream car route, which mm-hmm. would be carbon seats, mm-hmm. the PCCBs. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would get the black painted calipers on the PCCBs because... Yeah. I kind of like those gold wheels.
Oh, okay, so you go gold wheels with
on black, a silver car or black calipers. Black or silver car.
On the right car, gold wheels look fantastic.
Yeah, and they're not blingy gold. They're almost more of a bronze gold from what I've seen.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
And so I think either way, I'd probably go a silver car just because my last two have been black. And I've always gone for the non-metallic black, which is what this is, I believe. And when those cars are clean and shiny, they're beautiful. But silver, I think, probably makes more sense here in Colorado. Just stays a little cooler. I think it's a little easier to keep nice looking, hide some scratches and things. Not that a car of mine would ever get a scratch, Doug. But
that's impossible. Right? like you'd bump a rental Mustang into it.
That's right. Yeah. You know, these things do happen. Yeah. And, so I'm thinking, yeah. So. Realistically, I'd probably do the real light spec one if I was able to figure this out, but I would love to have those extra toys. So I'm thinking silver car. Maybe I'd do one of the expensive options, either the carbon brakes. And for me, it's just that I hate brake dust.
Yeah.
Silver, GT silver. So it's the silver I like, which is the GT silver. And then there are four-wheel options. There's one-wheel design, but there are four. You can get the... The default is sort of a satin gray, satin black. You can do painted silver as a no-cost option, or you can go, I think, painted. No, I'm sorry. It's sort of a satin gray color, silver, no cost. Then you can do a painted black wheel, or the gold wheel, and I think those are both about $600 options. So I think a GT silver car with those gold wheels would be really, really sharp. And I can't imagine that a $102,000 GT4 would be any less fun than a $130,000 GT4.
Yeah, I mean, so you don't... I mean, you're not a big track day guy, right?
No, in fact...
So I think you... Well...
Yeah. And I've heard the carbon brakes, right? I've heard both camps, right? Like, you don't want them if you're on the track, and other people say they do. But I think they look cool. I like that there's no brake dust, but they're $8,000 or $9,000.
And they squeak a lot, don't they?
I had them on my 997, and it was not an issue.
They didn't squeak.
Of course, those were a generation or two before. What?
They didn't make any noise or anything?
No, nothing unusual.
Yeah, I hear guys talking about like they have GT3s and GT3 RSs. I feel like they talk about it's like, yeah, they squeak a lot.
I think it's
just the way it is.
You can get some glazing and all that. I think that might be exacerbated by driving on the track. But yeah, generally speaking, I'm not a track guy.
Okay.
I enjoy it, but I'm also OCD and like to keep my car nice and can't really afford track day insurance every time you go out.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's
track day, yeah. I mean, track. It's funny, if you love cars, racing is just torture for cars, basically.
Yeah,
I mean, racing is basically like pushing the car to the limit all the time. Yeah,
my jam, if you want to call it that, I like to drive fast in the canyons. So, to me, that gives me my thrills, and it's cheaper, and it's closer, and it's less hassle, and we'll use it on the car. So, I think I'd go one of those two ways. I like silver with the gold wheels. Black with gold wheels is beautiful, too. And there's even a dark blue that's really sharp. Of course, the chalk is nice, too. And I paint the samples an extra $12,000, so I ruled that out.
It's only $12,000?
Yeah, but I know they hold their value. At least they hold their value
these days. I might buy my car for $12,000. That's right? Just the painting option.
So that's option. I mean, and again, let me reiterate. We're talking about a car that, I mean, this is, if I were to do this, this would be a real stretch for me.
Yeah, okay.
But I would feel a little bit better knowing that the car is not losing much value, and at least probably wouldn't lose much value.
I think you'd relatively, you'd be parking money there for a little while.
I think
it's not exactly, even the best car is not like real estate, but it's as safe as a car gets in terms of.
I think so. Yeah.
And if your daughter has to eat bologna sandwiches a little more this week, I mean, isn't that worth it for that?
We're already at bologna. Where do we go from here?
Yeah, where do we go from here? We're already at bologna. We need to go down.
All the peanut butter time. It's...
hummus. You can make hummus by the,
that's right.
Really, really inexpensively. So
by the barrel. It's something I have to think about. It's, realistically, it's probably not going to happen. But in a way, I'd feel a lot... I'd have a lot less trepidation about buying a brand new car under warranty than I would, as much as I love that 997.2 GT3. I guess my concern, the whole thing that got me about that 997.2 GT3 was just how special it felt. It was all about the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the GT4, the new one, too, I believe that it's similar engine, derived from the regular Carrera or what have you. So
the first generation GT4 has the basically lifted Carrera S.
Yeah, I think that's just the case right here in. Too. I mean, I guess I have some learning to do, but
it's weird. It's a six cylinder. It's based off the 991 architecture.
Oh, it's the turbo motor without the turbo, right? Is
exactly.
That what it is? Okay, that's right.
Yeah, so it's a little bit different. They went in a different way. Yeah, you would expect they just would have dropped the Carrera S engine in it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad it's a little more special.
But it'll be normally aspirated, yeah.
Yeah, okay, and then we can go back to their argument about how much faster is it going to be than my turbo Ford Altitude. We're going to cut away some of that edge. I'm sure that this car is faster in every way than what I have now.
Yeah, it probably is, but at high altitude, it'll probably outperform it, but you'll notice a performance drop off probably more than what you're used to right now.
So. Well, and just in the whole reason I like these cars we talked about, the 997 GT3 episode is just the experience, how it feels, how it makes you feel.
Yeah.
And I would just, it'd be a bit of a leap of faith that this car has it, but I'm thinking it probably does.
I mean, if you believe everything that's been written and produced about it, it's a very special car. I mean, I guess... I've never really heard people make a hardcore decision about whether they should get GT3 or GT4. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess if you can afford both, people tell you to get the GT3, but...
Well, I know I can't afford a new GT3.
But it is, so. Yeah, it is, but yeah, exactly. It's a big, yeah. It's a big caveat to start off a sentence is if you can afford. It's like, but you get that same fizz, you get that same sort of special feeling from that's the GT4.
That's what I would
want. Yeah, and that's important.
So
it's a big purchase.
You should really love it. It's the biggest purchase. And then, of course, you know, it probably won't happen, but it's fun to think about. And hey, maybe it will. In the meantime, I'm having a lot of fun mocking up different configurations on the
That's always the best part. In some ways, isn't that the best part? It's better than even owning it. It's
just kind of,
it kind of is. All right.
Hey, more to come on that.
So we'll say no on a automatic Mini Cooper S, and maybe on a 718 GT4.
Maybe we can go on this car together. Maybe that's how we make this happen.
That's what we got. We got a plan B. Plan Z.
That might be how we afford this.
Yeah.
Thing, so. All right.
We're gonna take a pause. All right. We're back for our last segment of this episode. We're going to talk a little bit about an idea that Ryan and I had that I turned into a list of cars that I think maybe you should drive that takes you down the continuum of sports cars.
So this started because I had this idea, and we're going to do this, I think, on the next episode, but realized here as we're talking and got into the GT4 and the other stuff that probably warrants its own episode.
The automatic Mini Cooper S.
The automatic Mini Cooper S.
Car that did not change my life.
So now we know. So the idea was sort of, you know, it wasn't sort of. The idea was 10 cars to drive before you die.
Mm-hmm.
A little morbid maybe, but I see these lists everywhere. But I've never seen a list of cars, so that's what we're going to do.
Yeah,
but we are going to do that,
Got me thinking of a new idea, which would be a list of cars to drive that would sort of like take you through the history of the sports car.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the sports car from its earliest days, you know, through the major points of it along the way, the major milestones, things like that, to like the current day.
Yeah.
Kind of show you where you are right now. So I took a stab at throwing together a list. So I'll.
And I just asked before we went on air, it was your first car, the MGTD, and you said no. So what is the first? Because how far back did you go, son?
I went back to the teens. I went to a Stutz.
The first teens.
Went back to a Stutz Bearcat.
I actually know this car.
Yeah. It's from Indianapolis.
Think so. Is it navy blue, the one you're thinking of? I picture this navy blue and gold car, and it's kind of torpedo-like. And
Exactly. Yeah, that kind of looks like a World War I fighter plane, basically.
And that's from the teens.
Yeah, I think those are from the teens and 20s. No, it came in different body styles. I mean, some of them look like
there's a yellow one I see pictures of.
That's also one I was thinking of, too.
I know what you're talking about.
This is the one, like, in my old books, this is the one that always seemed to be, like, the car that was, like, the first sports car. Mm. I mean, it was, you know, it was built by this company in Indianapolis. It's a Bearcat. It's at the time, had a big engine, probably 23 horsepower.
What is a Bearcat?
I don't know.
Is that actually an actual animal? I mean, there's an animal called a Bearcat, or is that just some, like...
No.
Like a zephyr, like just some sort of...
Yeah, I don't know, it's like a...
Yeah, it's a Bearcat.
It's a Bearcat. It's a bear and a cat. It's got twice as tough as either, so I don't know. It wasn't even a name that came up in some, like, GM marketing meeting.
Yeah.
I mean, Stutz was a tiny company back then, so... I don't know. They were light, and they were, at the time, the most powerful engines you could get. They had a racing history in Indianapolis, so they, you know, they had street cred.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they I mean, they were fast for their time. I mean, it probably felt like really crazy, out of control. Yeah. You were talking about, like, how the GT3 made you feel it was like a dangerous car. These cars actually might have been dangerous.
That's a point here.
Maybe, they might have actually been, like, dangerous.
Are we so jaded maybe that we need to go back to cars from the teens?
Yeah, like, I think I think we have to ride around in cars with bicycle style tires.
If my car doesn't require a riding mechanic, then we're, you know.
Yeah, with just a piece of glass is like your windshield, and you're completely exposed. You need goggles and a hat and a scarf to drive.
I'm saying steam would be.
Yeah, let's get a Stanley Steamer.
This car, actually, and I will say, compared to other cars, if it's the car I'm picturing in my head right now, was way more sporty.
Yeah, I mean, than the average car.
Yeah.
It looked almost like an airplane, basically.
Yeah.
So that was my first one on it. So the second car I went with was from the late 20s.
Okay.
I went with, and this is a car that So this is a car that if you ask my dad, you know, what is his favorite car of all time? And he always said this. He always had a quick answer for it. Okay. It was a 4 or 4.5 liter blower Bentley.
Okay.
So these are the cars, yeah. From the, late 20s. You know, England.
Didn't win any races though, right? It was just reading about.
Oh no, they won the Mans.
Maybe I'm thinking of.
No, Bentley. These Bentleys won the Mans, or at least they raced in it. I don't know, but they were competitive.
Have to check that.
Like I said, we're seldom wrong, but never right. We're never right, but seldom wrong. On this podcast, but they had.
No, it's all about getting the conversation started, Doug.
Exactly. Yeah. No, exactly. So. No, but these had a great racing pedigree. They were, you get them in that great old dark British racing green with like the, the faded
tall
Union Jack. Oh, they're huge. Yeah, upright, I saw one of these once. They're huge. They're like a small locomotive, basically.
Didn't they just announce Bentley? Didn't they just announce they were going to build like 20 new ones or something? Is that right? Okay.
Yes. Yes, because there's apparently some people who just have way too much money and they don't know what to do with it.
Well,
so they will basically.
Such a Fiona original that you were hanging on to.
No, it doesn't. Because that's what some people, there's a class of money that we don't understand. Because these people own real versions of cars.
So this would be a driver.
And they build replicas to actually drive.
I see.
It's a problem we don't understand. So. I think I'm going to have a replica built in my future BRZ just so I can drive guilt-free. but I think this was just sort of like as car technology was really starting to ramp up, they were starting to put a bigger engine in it. At the time, a bigger and bigger engine. It had a supercharger on it. And these things just flew down Moseline Strait at Le Mans. And,
is that what you call it?
Yeah, well, I failed French.
No, I don't know. I've never known how to pronounce that.
Moseline Strait.
I thought it was Mulsanne. But I'm probably not right. I don't know.
Well, like I said, I think...
But it's a straight. It's not a curve, right?
My D-minus in French, I think, would beg to differ on
that.
So.
I didn't even attempt French, so...
Well, it's a curve now, but it used to be a really long straight.
Okay, that's must have been some straight...
You know, it was. That's where all the fastest times were.
Right, they had to.
Yeah, and they had to put, I think they had two chicanes in
it. Right, because it was too...
because it was getting too fast. Yeah.
But
they had, there was a time, like, as late as the 70s or 80s where it was just completely straight.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Anyways, but they're flying down. You're still open. You're in that giant wheel with like the rope wrapped around it. Yeah. I don't know, but it was like I think it was a moment. So
tires, like spare tires, strapped to the side.
Yeah, because apparently that's what you if you lost a tire on the back side, you'd pull over. That's why you have your mechanic still
there.
That's
right.
And you got it. These cars only had one door though on one side.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just jump out there. The gear shifter is on the outside of the car. You're reaching out of the car and changing gears out there.
You're not gonna tell me you've driven one of these.
No, I have not.
But you've seen one.
No, because my dad always talked about them. I just remember. I looked into them a lot though.
This was the era of the Bentley boys.
Yes,
right?
This is the real Bentley, like the actual Bentley brothers, right. Bentley boys. Yeah, this is W.O. Bentley. This is kind of when Bentley was like a. I mean, Bentleys now are. I didn't really know what they were for most of my life. They were basically like just the non-Rolls Royce, but Rolls Royce. But they still kind of had, like, they were always turbos or something, and that's what gave them kind of an edge over Rolls-Royces.
Well,
but,
I think for many years, they were literally just a different radiator shell or whatever.
Arguably. They were still owned by Rolls-Royce.
Absolutely.
But this was a time...
would sell both, and then, there was a time when they had to, I think, make a decision. Like, we're going to move forward selling Rolls-Royces, or we're going to move forward selling Bentleys.
And then when the Continental GT came out in, what, the early 2000s or late 90s, I think that was the first time, Bentley had, an interesting product and started to differentiate itself.
It certainly democratized the brand.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, it was like a luxury Grand Tour.
Yeah.
Whereas before, they basically just built, they built, luxury cars that were just not Rolls Royce. Again, just not Rolls Royce.
I would argue that was the first real sort of commodity car that they made.
But I think it was good for them. But not to get too off track. But the point is, but back at this time,
it was built on the Volkswagen Phaeton platform.
I believe
right?
so. Yeah.
It was
ultimate
the knock
sort
against
of,
them. But
they sold really well and people loved them. I mean, they were
and
for
they
what
still
they were
look good. Like if you see an 03, I mean, you can buy one for I think $40,000 now.
Yeah,
they don't look that different.
If you're a brave
from
man,
one and
they don't. They kept the look very similar. Yeah. The current one is probably the biggest departure from the original look, but it's still very similar.
Yeah.
And they, I mean, they sold as many as they could make. I mean, it was a huge success for them. I would argue it was a good departure for them to then not just be like a Rolls Royce kind of clone. But back at this time, they were like a, you know, they were like a bad boy hot rod shop. Yeah. I mean, they rich were like, yeah, boy. Well, yes, like they were wealthy English gentlemen, you know, bad boys.
Yeah. It's either this or shoot a lion.
Yeah. That's well, probably do both. You know, you probably do. Yeah. You probably, you shoot your, you drive your Bentley when you're back in England and you go on safari,
well,
you know?
Well, right. The term shooting break sort of comes from this era, right?
You want
to be able to.
Well, and you, that was a time when you go on the Grand Tour, you know, when you're this young, you know, rich aristocratic Englishman, you drive around in your Bentley.
TV show.
You know, it wasn't, it was actually a term.
Yeah.
You went around,
you do that.
You went around, you basically, when you were, just as you were becoming a man, you would go on this trip across Europe and just kind of.
Sow your
wild oats and see the sights, that kind of thing. Yeah. Probably drive around in your Bentley and probably go on safari in Kenya, you know, when it was still a colony of England.
Snort some opium, drink some absinthe.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's just a Tuesday night when you're on the Grand Tour. Yeah. So, you know. But we're digressing here a little bit. The next sort of stop on my continuum would be, which I thought, you know, you always hear in the legend of, you know, when sports cars started to take off in America is because GIs went over to England and they became fascinated.
Kidding.
It was a time warp continuum. They brought back Miatas. No, but they brought back the 1930s version of a Miata, which was an MGT, basically.
Yeah.
MGT and the derivatives.
Yes, the TC and the TD.
Yeah, I mean, it was they were there. The early versions of those cars were being produced before World War II.
Right.
They were over there.
Yeah. They look like cars from the 30s.
They do. I mean, they are. They're basically like scaled down, you know, Duesenbergs, basically. But like they were small and light, and they just had a different feel to them. They were totally different than anything we were building in the United States.
Right.
And so, you know, you have one continent. You know, at that time, things were really separated, and it wasn't as easy to bring things over as it is now. You know, there wasn't as much of like a global market on these things. But you just hear about these GIs with all this extra combat pay, and they're coming back from these, you know, experiences. The pilots are, you know, they're flying over Europe and they're, you know, they come back from these near life experiences and they decide they want to like a taste of something. So they buy themselves one of these sports cars and then they bring them back.
Right.
And they suddenly, you know, these English sports cars take root in America.
Right.
And they change, you know, they change the dynamics of what we want. And they're completely different than what we had there.
It's amazing to see that old footage of these like racetracks in California where these cars were going up against American cars and they couldn't be more different.
They couldn't be more different. And it was going on in England too. I think one of the great things about England is that coming out of World War II, they had to build all these air bases all over England.
Yeah.
And then when the war was over, they all turned into racetracks.
Well, that's a great point.
And they had you know, British touring car over there and they you know, championships and they had tiny little cars racing against big cars.
Well, Top Gear's track.
Yeah, that's an old, it's an old RAF air
base. Well, now it's a neighborhood, I understand.
Oh, that's too bad to hear that. Oh, shoot. I wish I didn't know that. But you're right. But it kicked off something. And so, which leads me into my next car, I think, on this stop of continuing.
Well, let's stop
so,
and just review. So, you started out with the Stutz Bearcat, or the, again, I don't know if I'm pronouncing these right.
Yeah.
But, of course, people just talk differently back then, so.
Yeah, so maybe, maybe we don't know, they didn't know how to pronounce it.
Stutz
Bearcat. Yeah.
And then you went to the Blower Bentley.
Yep.
And then the MG TC TD
sort of anything on that sort of continuum.
Okay.
There,
and so at this point we're in the mid 50s, early to mid 50s.
Okay. So my next stop is in the 60s, basically. So what I was going to say is that this MG, you know, these GIs bringing over these small little British sports cars forced the American companies to re-examine and produce a product for it. And I think we all know that GM through Chevy brought that first version of the Corvette, which, you know, evolved into, and, you know, the Ford built the Thunderbird, was their first attempt at making a sports car, which, you know, was initially more successful than the Corvette, but then kind of turned into a more of a grand touring car. But I went with the Stingray Corvette.
Okay.
That's kind of like the next step.
63, is that what that is?
Yeah, exactly. Like 63, 64. Window. Yeah, like early. Yeah. Well, it could be any of the Stingrays. And the reason I picked that is because it kind of like, it kind of represents a little bit of that, you know, American version of a sports car, but also incorporates a little bit of that sort of American muscle car, you know, legacy into it.
It is a good looking car.
It's a great looking car. It has that big block sort of like, well, it's a small block, but it's like has that, you know, big American horsepower V8, but with the most sophisticated platform being built at that time in America.
Yeah.
Least. And I think it just it's a nice sort of stop on this trip. I mean, I think those are still to this day just one of the best looking cars ever designed.
Yeah, so. Those are good.
Next, I would go with the original Datsun 240Z.
Ah, okay. And that was what, 68, 69, 70?
I think it's, I don't know exactly. I think we're talking in the 70s. Yeah, I think like 70, 71, 72. Okay. But it's like, it started off a new revolution though.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, it was Japanese. It was super reliable, but it had great performance. Had that straight six engine in it.
Yeah.
You know, to this day, I mean, they're still, you know, people are still, you know, finding these cars and restoring them.
Well, they've really come back, had a renaissance. And that's a car that I think they're really starting to look good again. We talk about this all the time, but, you know, when I was growing up, those were just always old cars to me.
Yeah. Well, and I remember talking to my dad, who, again, gave me sort of the look into what it was like at the moment, which was, it basically was like, it looked as good as a Jaguar, but it cost like a third as much and gave you a ton of performance, you know, and you could compete with some of the, you know, higher performing cars of the era with that type of thing. So it offered a lot for a little, it didn't ask much in return and super reliable.
Yeah.
So, but you know, it was at a time when, you know, your Datsun, you know, soon to be Nissan, even, you know, Toyota, Honda, those companies were really trying to like make inroads into the American market. So they brought some great stuff here to like try and like change the perception.
Yeah.
I mean, they're fighting a perception in this country at the time of some people wouldn't have even would never have considered buying a Japanese car company because they were still sore and bitter about the, you know, the Pacific War and stuff like that. So, next I went with 1973 911 RS, which I think is kind of considered the ultimate version of that first long hood generation 911.
You think of that one white with the blue stripes and the...
I've always liked the white with the orange.
The orange,
with the orange Carrera on the side. Yeah, yeah. A little ducktail spoiler
this
on
is
it.
The, you know, this has become one of those cars, like the Shelby Cobra. Like when you see one, you just assume it's not a real one.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of replicas out
that?
There.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of replicas out there.
And refresh my memory, was this... I know it was intended for racers, but was it cheaper than the standard model at the time? Was this one of those? Or
There's someone who was saying, like, this is funny because this was from a time when they stripped out features, they actually charged less for it, which, you know, now automakers are like, what? That's stupid. We took out everything, so we're going to charge you $10,000 more for it now.
Yeah,
it does. It was
this Porsche fanboys.
It was like thinner glass. It was like, you know, thinner, you know, lighter materials on the inside. It was a 2.7 liter, you know, I think like twin plug, you know, flat six, you know, but it was basically, it was a stripped out, you know, I don't know if it was actually considered homologated, pasteurized. Is this car pasteurized? version of like a, to get to qualify for a certain class. But the point is it was Porsche taking like everything they'd learned about, you know, how to make the 911s a race model and putting it on the road. But I would argue any sort of 911 from this time period, you know, the long hood, you know, era, it was a revolution at the time. I mean, it was different than every other sports car out there. It was, it's to this day created a class of car people that just love Porsches and are just like, you know, indoctrinated to it. You're in this cult. You're in this.
Yeah, absolutely. In this, I resigned to drinking the Kool-Aid a long time ago, and you know, and it's something else we talked about. These cars are still genuinely quick.
Yeah.
All these years later, they must have been shockingly quick at the time.
They must have, and quickness isn't even their, like, you know, repertoire. I mean, like, handling is really really what they're known for. But you're absolutely right. They're fast. I mean, they will, will feel fast, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the same way that, you know, I don't know if you've ever been into sailing or done any sailing at all.
I've had some exposure to it, but no, I've never been a sailor.
I've sailed a lot. It's something my dad sort of raised me on. Sailing is much slower than obviously being in a powerboat. But it feels faster.
Right.
It's that whole experience because you're organically connected to the boat and you're feeling the wind and you're feeling the boat it's healing over basically as you're going. You feel like you're going a million miles an hour and you're only going, you know, 15 knots basically.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like almost any powerboat will beat it obviously, but it's because you're so connected to the whole experience, which is I think what all these old lighter cars feel like. So. I struggled a little bit with where to go next.
Okay.
So maybe I can, I would take some input at this point at any point, but
the last one was sort of a high point in the,
It is, it's definitely, I think it's a high point in the sports car world.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if this next one really kind of gets to the same place. But okay. I went with the Lamborghini Countach. But I would offer, or I would accept any other choices.
No, I that think
sort of come
as,
out of the late 70s
as
or
good
early
as
80s.
Anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could have gone with the. Well, gosh, I mean, the Ferrari Daytona was probably more of a GT car, so.
And I almost put that on the list, yeah. Though, but yeah, but I did. I think ultimately, I think I decided that was a GT car.
So. Yeah, no, that's as good as anything.
Well, yeah,
it's iconic. Obviously, it's
iconic. It kind of represents the move to mid-engine.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of like, you know, exotic mid-engine sort of sports car world, which now at this point, you know, we consider most of our top sports cars are mid-engine. Mm-hmm. You know, even. As we all know, the Corvette finally had to, you know, move to the mid-engine layout to make the next sort of performance leap.
Yeah.
So.
Did you ever see the old 60 Minutes?
Yeah.
Mortally Safer.
Yeah.
I just rewatched that.
It was Balboni, right?
Yeah.
That he was driving around
yeah,
with
and
when
I
he was
that
still.
He's still going on these rallies.
I love it. I mean, he's in that video. Just watching that video. Seeing him just open
give
up,
me chills.
Yeah, open up the Countach on these regular roads, you know, passing little Fiats and tractors and things like that.
Flashing the headlights.
It's hilarious. It's one of my favorite. Every couple of years, I always go back and look it up again and watch it one more time. I remember that video when it aired.
I do too.
Watched it on TV.
Yeah, we watched it show religiously on Sunday afternoon, Sunday nights. And...
Well, we didn't. That's the thing. We didn't watch it, but we had heard that they were doing a Lamborghini section,
okay.
So I tuned in for that.
Okay.
And it was like, you know, people on TV were talking about cars.
Right.
And I was like, this is exciting.
Well, that's
so,
a great point. This was, you know, if you were a car guy up until, you know, relatively recently, you know, internet and. There was no. It's like when Top Gear came on. My dad introduced me to Top Gear. It blew my mind. I had never seen anything like that. Now everything looks like that. But to your point, that was a big deal.
It was a big deal. Yeah, that there was high performance cars being driven in a fun way on TV.
Yeah.
It was like we need to watch this.
It kind of made it okay.
Yeah.
So.
But you're right. I mean, you're right. Top Gear. You know, once Top Gear. I mean, yeah. For any of our listeners who are under 16, or let's say 16-ish. There was a time when you couldn't hear the car, you couldn't see it being driven in front of you, just had to read about it basically. So
pore over those Car and Driver magazines where they had all the specs in the back and that's as good as it got.
That is as good as it
got. Anyway, so what's the next one?
So then I went Porsche 959 because I thought that was
follow up to the
I might drop a Lamborghini Countach, but I would definitely keep the 959 because you know, it was a moonshot for Porsche, but it introduced it laid the foundation for where we go for high performance, which is turbocharged, all-wheel drive, you know, adjustable suspension type things. I mean, it's kind of like the genesis of all those types of things.
Would one call that a bellwether car?
Possibly, I think we would call that, it was predicting the weather, for sure, it was. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, they knew it, or I don't know if they knew it or if they just set the pace, I don't know. Because that was such a big, the car was based on the contemporary 911. But in terms of performance, I mean, it took it all the way up to 200 miles an hour.
Again, still a very, very quick
Very car. Fast car.
Although here it's one of those cars, too, that isn't maybe as, doesn't feel as quick as it is because it is so refined. It is so, and that's a car, you know, you weren't sitting in carbon shells. I mean, that was a car that had a full leather interior that,
I mean, they still, they didn't, at that point, they didn't really know. I mean, they were nicely bolstered leather
seats.
But
it was the
sport
version.
Yeah, well, there was the sport and the comfort model, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the comfort models are the more common ones. Yeah. I think the S's are a little bit more. Have you watched the Everyday Driver video on YouTube about this?
I have, yeah. It was pretty good. That car has been popping up a lot on YouTube channels lately. Like,
that exact
car that's in Utah or Portland or whatever it is. But
Okay.
Fair enough. No, that's a good one.
Well, I think as we're coming out, this is now we're in the late 80s, you know, and it's kind of like we have a new, you know, exciting decade ahead of us. This was a car, I think, that took us down that road. Again, I struggled again for what to go after that. But what I ended up going with was the Ferrari 458, because I feel like for a while there, the Ferrari 458 was basically...
Curious choice, Doug.
Are you being sarcastic when you say that, or...?
No, it's just... Oh. That's an interesting...
I feel like there was a time period of about 4 to 5 years where that was that was the benchmark of all companies. They wanted to build their version of the 458 because that was just the best
car. But also the end
there.
Of an era.
Yeah, and well, into the manual transmission option on a Ferrari.
Well, I think they made a couple, right? But generally, those were
no. The 430 was the last. Yeah, well, the 430 was the last one that you could
maybe get. Maybe there have been a couple of conversions then, but it was the naturally aspirated.
That's true. Yeah. Flat plane crank, naturally aspirated. But at that point, they were all. It was all, the dual clutch.
People have traded their 488s. Back on the 458s because there was just something
about it,
yeah, visceral or
whatever. It's probably the sound on it. It's just, there's nothing better than a naturally aspirated Ferrari V8 at full song. It's just incredible. But I just picked it because I feel like that McLaren was always trying to benchmark it. Mm-hmm. Porsche was always trying to benchmark it with the 911 Turbo, I guess, and maybe some of the base GT3s. Yeah. But it was just the car that everyone was trying to basically work around, and it was. It was a brand new clean slate design. They were the 430 is the evolution of the 360.
Right.
So the 458 was a brand new clean slate design. It had active aero.
Yeah.
The things at the front. Uh-huh. They degraded as you went faster and let more air in.
Were they active or were they passive? I thought.
What do you call it? What is it when it's designed to bend? It doesn't. Nothing mechanically moves it. There's nothing mechanical moving. But it was designed that as the car moved faster, it opened up more and more air could get in.
It's still active air.
I would kind of say it was active. Yeah. Dumb active.
Someone who knows more semi-active. Than we do can let us know.
Yeah, we'll call it semi-active. But I mean, I'm looking for any input here. If you have any other ideas at this point, it's funny that I guess.
Wait, is this where we're ending? Is that?
I have one more, which is then the current McLaren 720S long tail.
Okay, and it's the 720. Okay.
Yeah, that's the one that I feel like everyone just comes out of just saying it's just a spaceship. It's just the fastest car any normal person will ever be able to drive. I mean, there's faster cars, but there's the 720 is still like. The sports car. I don't want to put cars like the P1 on this list. I want to put like sports cars on this list. And this is the sports car in their lineup that just somehow just like is off the charts.
Right.
It's just faster than everything. It just makes you faster on a track.
Yeah, I think so. That's as good as anything, although I would also argue that sometimes these cars become more clear as time moves on.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's probably the last one on your list, the most recent, is the toughest one to choose, right?
It is, yeah, because I don't know exactly what this era represents right now. And I wonder if I should have put, something like the 911R on this or GT3?
No.
But
The 911R, no, because it's... They took away some performance for the sake of experience or retro appeal or whatever. The GT3 is amazing in its own right, but it's naturally aspirated.
It doesn't represent sort of the progress of or sort of the moving towards.
As wonderful as it might be, but no, I think you chose well.
You chose well. All right. Well, and you want to argue on any of these, or you think we
No, I couldn't have done a better job.
Then I guess there we are. So there's that's your trip through history bucket list of sports cars.
Yeah,
to try,
and you watch. So. Doug's gonna set a trend. All the really cool kids are gonna be driving cars from...
They're going to be driving Stutz Bearcats?
100 years ago, here you watch. Because where do you go from a McLaren 720?
I need to get back to organic.
Doesn't
get more analog than a Stutz Bearcat.
Are we going to see those popping up at Cherry Creek Mall?
Yeah, I wish that'd be awesome.
For those of you who know, this is our sort of recurring joke. All the cool cars at Cherry Creek Mall.
They're always creeping through Cherry Creek. Yeah. Well, you just got to buy it to drive slowly so everyone knows how much money.
As long as it's got Bluetooth compatibility.
Yeah, that's all they care about. So.
All right. Hey, next episode's going to be really good because we're going to talk about these 10 cars you have to drive before you die. And that's going to be our...
That's going to be our big argument, I think.
It's going to be a good one.
So tune in for that.
I look forward to that.
All right.
See you then. Listen to you then. Talk to you then, whatever.